It's supposed to be food? It is food. It's kale. It's good. Look, it's not limp like lettuce. She was right. It moved under my fork like it was crisp. Kale, yeah, I've heard of it. They deep fry it, right? I don't know how they prepared it. Now she poked it with a fork suspiciously. You know what would make it better? I stabbed the kale with a fork and sniffed at it. If they did deep fry it, but replaced the kale with a Snickers bar. Or Twinkie, Taylor said. Have you ever tried a deep-fried Twinkie? They have them at the state fair in Tennessee. A deep-fried Twinkie. Unbelievable, Skippy said from the speaker in the ceiling. This is proof there is a God. Huh? I asked. How do you figure that? Because this clearly shows you monkeys are so freaking stupid. There's no way you could have survived until now without divine intervention helping you. Amazing. I took a bite of the kale, if that's what it was. It wasn't bad. Whatever this is, apparently it's a religious experience for Skippy. I didn't say, oh, forget it. People laughed. Not at me this time, at Skippy. Shut up, all of you. Wow, that was a snappy comeback. Bye, Skippy, I said. Pleasant dreams. I could get to like kale, if that's what it was. A thought occurred to me while sitting in my office 3 days before we were scheduled to arrive at the next target. It was not a pleasant thought. I pulled up a schematic of the ship on my tablet, then an external view we'd taken from the Theranan dropships. Skippy, how many star carriers like the Dutchman do the Theranan have? If you mean this particular type or class of ship, they have hundreds. It is a common design they have used for almost 400 years with little change. He snorted. Little change, because in the last 400 years the Theranan haven't managed to steal enough higher technology to improve their piece of junk starships, or they stole it and can't figure out how it works. Stupid little green pinheads. They have hundreds exactly like the Dutchman. No little differences. I knew the United States Navy had standard ship designs like the Arleigh Burke destroyers, but among those ships were subclasses that an experienced sailor could identify at a glance. Oh, yeah, sure, there are subtle differences, as ships are overhauled or upgraded over the years. There are, or were, about 70 ships almost identical to our Flying Dutchman. Why? Were you hoping our pirate ship is something special? A collector's item or something? The opposite, Skippy. I'm hoping there is nothing unique about the Dutchman that can be easily identified. If someone gets close enough for a good look at us, or our stealth field fails, I don't want the Theranan realizing this is the same ship that disappeared near Paradise. That ship disappeared near where there are humans, plus the wormhole near the human homeworld mysteriously shut down around the same time this ship disappeared. That might make a suspicious Theranan ask too many questions. I see your point, and it is a good one, Joe. The Theranan tend to be rather paranoid about security. Not paranoid enough. They didn't count on Skippy the Magnificent. True, I am magnificent. And if you were being sincere for a change, thank you. Sincere. I give you props when you've earned it, Skippy. All right, have the Theranan lost a star carrier just like this one? Lost like they didn't see it get destroyed in battle? All they know is it went missing somewhere, the way this ship did? That's a tough one. I need to search the Theranan database. No, unfortunately. No ship exactly like this configuration is missing other than the Dutchman itself. Crap. However, Skippy added with a touch of a smirk to his voice, a star carrier very similar to the Dutchman did disappear mysteriously in this sector 17 years ago. At the time, it was fully loaded with heavy Krystang warships. The Theranan found debris from several of that star carrier's Theranan escort ships, but never any sign of the star carrier itself, or of even a single one of the Krystang ships. At the time, the Theranan accused the Krystang of having stolen their star carrier, while the Krystang accused their patrons of destroying or losing an entire Krystang heavy battle group. According to the databanks I downloaded from both the Theranan and Krystang, neither side admits to knowing what happened. Or they do know, and they're not stupid enough to put it in a database aboard a ship. True, although in this case I suspect the Theranan truly do not know what happened to that ship. I suspect nefarious action by the Krystang. They would gladly throw away a battle group of their own crappy ships in order to capture a Theranan starship with an advanced jump drive. That missing ship is close enough to the Dutchman, especially with modifications that would have inevitably been made in the past 17 years, that we could easily pass for that ship. The Theranin identify their ships by quantum fluctuations embedded in the jump drive fields. Each ship is unique. I could adjust our drive coils to mimic the missing ship's signature. I gave a big thumbs up, knowing Skippy could see that. That would be excellent. Not only do we avoid the Theranin suspecting humans stole their ship, we may sow distrust between the Theranin and the Kristang. Skippy laughed.
Oh, boo-hoo.
Gosh, it would be just awful for the lizards and little green men to get any more hateful of each other. Yeah, keep in mind, we would rather that no one gets a good look at the Dutchman. You keep using your magic to make people out there think we're a Jirapha ship. Understood. Hey, between us, we came up with another good idea. Mostly me, of course. As a monkey, I wasn't going to argue with him. Of course.
Chapter 12. Our investigation of the next potential site for an Elder base started well enough. To get there from the previous site, we didn't need Skippy to wake up a dormant wormhole or create a new connection for an active wormhole. We only needed to make normal transits through 2 regular, established wormholes, and then jump for about 5 days to another star system that was nothing special. This star system was not centered on yet another boring red dwarf star. This one was a yellow dwarf star, which I assumed meant it was small. It was upsetting to learn from Skippy and our science team that our own home star, the Sun, was itself classified a yellow dwarf. That didn't seem right to me. I remember being in school, I think it was the 3rd grade, seeing a model of our solar system, where the Earth was the size of a ping-pong ball and the Sun was a basketball. And I remember my teacher, Miss Carmichael, who I had a huge crush on and still do, telling us that if the model was to scale, the Sun would be over 1,000,000 times the size of the Earth. That blew my little 3rd grade mind. To our astrophysics team, however, our Sun was nothing special in the galaxy. They assured me that fact was very good for humanity, because it meant our Sun provided an environment for life to flourish, while the Sun was still young enough to be burning hydrogen instead of helium, or something like that. I still feel they were dissing our home star. When I hear burning hydrogen, I think of the Hindenburg exploding back in the 1930s. That's not good. This particular yellow dwarf star we investigated was about 7% larger than our Sun, but slightly cooler. It was older, and according to Skippy and our science team, closer to the end of its life, having burned a lot of its hydrogen supply. Our science team couldn't decide what they were more excited about. The possibility of recovering Elder artifacts, or getting a close look at an older G-type star with the Flying Dutchman's sophisticated sensors. Skippy had told our science team that the ship's sensors could allow them to look deep inside the star. We followed our now routine procedure. The Dutchman jumped to the edge of the star system, and the Flower jumped in to recon gas giant moons. Although this star system could have supported life, it had only 2 lifeless rocky inner planets, neither of which orbited in the Goldilocks zone. There were 3 gas giants. The Flower was first going to check the biggest one, a planet 30% more massive than Jupiter. If there was no Elder site on a moon around the largest planet, the Flower would return to check in with us, then proceed to investigate the other 2 gas giants. The Flower returned exactly on time to report excitedly they had detected a possible Elder facility on a small moon, and no sign the place had been ransacked already. Skippy figured someone at some time must have checked out the system because it had a G-type star. He guessed that once it had been determined the system had no habitable planets, no one had bothered to look any closer. This time I was hoping we would hit the jackpot. The Flower docked again. We waited for her crew to rejoin us while Skippy analyzed that ship's sensor data. "Looks good, Skippy?" I asked. "It's hard to tell anything with that ship's crappy Kristang sensors," he complained. When we'd taken the frigate, when we had captured an alien starship, I thought that was the most awesome thing that could ever happen. Since then, Skippy had explained that the Flower had been purchased 3rd-hand by the White Wind clan, that their sensors were in bad condition, long obsolete even by Kristang standards, and the ship overall had been poorly maintained in the past decade. "The stupid scanners keep drifting out of calibration. I can barely tell whether I'm looking at a moon or empty space," The senses again. Yep, I hear you. Man, I was tired of listening to Skippy complain about the equipment he had to work with. Did they find a potential Elder site or not? With this sensor data, it could be an Elder science facility, or it could be an alien car wash. I can't tell for sure. Fine. We'll know when we take the Dutchman in. Any sign of other ships? No. Again, it's hard to tell anything. The flower is practically blind. It doesn't help that this planet has an extremely powerful magnetic field. There is so much noise in the sensor data that the Theranin could hide a whole stealth fleet there and the flower wouldn't have seen it. Colonel Chang, I asked. He had returned from commanding the frigate and was standing beside me. Chang knew Skippy's low opinion of the frigate.
We didn't detect any threat, sir. I recommend we jump in with the Dutchman.
Skippy, I asked. The shiny beer can sighed.
Yeah, sure, I agree, why not? We can always jump back out.
He was going to regret saying that. We all were. Skippy programmed a jump that took us within easy dropship range from the Elder site, close enough for the Dutchman's sensors to thoroughly scan the site, far enough away that the moon's gravity wouldn't affect a jump away.
Jump successful, Desai reported, then turned to look at me. We emerged within 40 meters of the intended target, she said, and shook her head in amazement.
40 meters? Our best human program jump was 50,000 kilometers off target.
Our scientists said the theoretical best that was possible was 9,000 kilometers.
That some kind of quantum uncertainty made it impossible to get any closer. The laws of physics didn't provide any way to be more accurate. Yet Skippy always got us within 100 meters, usually much closer. He said quantum mechanics was uncertain if you took into account only one layer of space-time. That was another thing that had our science team scratching their heads.
Congratulations, Skippy. Another great jump, I said.
Yeah, yeah. I'm amazing the monkeys yet again. I'll take a bow later. Scanning now. By the way, the jump accuracy was 37 meters, not 40.
There is really an unusual level of interference from the magnetic...
No. Pilot, get us out of here now, now, now!
Desai didn't hesitate. Her finger had already been poised on the button to jump away. On the main display, I saw the symbol for a jump point forming, a split second from the ship being pulled into the jump wormhole it was generating.
Skippy shouted again. Belay the... Too late. The Dutchman jumped, or tried to. The whole ship vibrated so badly it felt like my teeth were gonna shake loose. There was a screeching, screaming, tearing sound, like the ship was being torn apart. The lights and displays flickered, the deck dropped away from me, then slammed me back in the chair as the artificial gravity cut out and came back on. There were so many warning symbols flashing on the displays it wasn't worth me trying to read them, and nothing we could do about it that Skippy wasn't already taken care of. To my uneducated eyes, instead of jumping far outside the system, we had only done a micro-jump. The moon we intended to investigate was still on the corner of the display.
Skippy, what happened? I asked.
To my credit, my voice was calm and only loud enough to be heard over other people shouting, alarms beeping, and the ship's structure flexing and groaning with terrifying noises. In the background was the battle station's alarm from Star Trek, which I forgot Sergeant Adams had programmed into the ship's systems.
A Theranin destroyer squadron, 5 ships, and we jumped in close to them. They got us partly caught in a damping field. Our attempted jump blew 17% of our drive coils. It would have been worse, but I cut power as we got pulled into the wormhole. The wormhole was collapsing on us anyway. We should jump again as soon as possible.
As he spoke, I noticed the main display showed we had a 63% charge in the jump drive capacitors. There will be a delay as I take the burned-out coils offline and recalibrate the drive.
How long?
I estimate...
Uh-oh. They found us again.
2 destroyers just jumped in. They're targeting us with maser beams and 6 missiles. Defensive systems on full auto, I ordered to the crew in the CIC.
The Theranin computer system that Skippy had upgraded would have to protect us from the inbound missiles. No way could any human react fast enough to hit a missile.
Pilot, you know what to do.
Aye, aye, Desai said tightly from the left-hand seat.
As she went to full thrust on the ship's normal space engines to dodge the destroyer's maser beams, the ship rocked.
Maser beam hit, Skippy reported flatly as the ship rocked again, harder this time.
Another hit. Shields compensating.
Should we shoot back? I asked.
The answer seemed obvious. I wanted to check with Skippy anyway.
Affirmative. It will keep those destroyers from getting closer. The three other destroyers have jumped in. We're surrounded. They're firing weapons. Weapons free, I ordered, and the display showed our particle beam cannons firing back. How soon can we jump? Not soon enough. They're projecting a damping field again, Skippy said. We're not ready, but we don't have a choice. We need to get out of here before that damping field reaches full strength. Jump option Echo. Echo. That was a micro-jump. Skippy must not have confidence the ship could handle a bigger distance. That was bad. Those destroyers would be right on top of us again. Pilot, I ordered. Engage jump option Echo. This wasn't a fight against low-tech Kristang ships. This was the Dutchman against equivalent technology, against true warships designed to be in combat. Our star carrier, by contrast, was a bus, a high-tech bus, but a bus anyway. It was a nightmare. We jumped and jumped again, trying to get away. It wasn't working. The destroyers always found us quickly. Sometimes only two, sometimes all five surrounded us and pounded our shields. Desai did her best to keep the enemy guessing where we were, and Skippy said she was doing a good job. The problem was that the enemy had multiple data-linked sensor platforms, and we couldn't dodge their maser beams for more than a couple seconds before they adjusted aim and hit us again. Our automatic defenses were knocking missiles out of the sky left and right, but each volley of missiles got closer and closer to us as our sensors were degraded by flashback from maser beams impacting our shields. It wasn't working. With each jump, we blew more drive coils, even when the Theranin weren't able to get a damping field established. Skippy never had time to recalibrate the jump drive, and every time we lost drive coils, the system fell further out of calibration. It wasn't working. We weren't getting out of this one. The crew knew it. I could see it on their faces. Shields were strained to the limit, maser beams were partially bleeding through, they were targeting the aft engineering section of the ship to hit our reactors and jump drive coils. 21 minutes into the running battle, we lost our first reactor. It was damaged, and Skippy had to shut it down. With that reactor gone, the other five struggled to power the stealth field, the shields, our maser cannons, and to recharge the jump drive capacitors. Without asking me, Skippy had dropped artificial gravity to 1/3 power and shut down all non-essential systems. It wasn't working. The Flying Dutchman shuddered again, with sounds of groaning and the terrifying shriek of metal components being torn apart. The displays on the bridge flickered, and the air was filled with alarm bells and klaxons from almost every system. Skippy, get us out of— The ship shook violently again. Direct hit on number 4 reactor, Skippy announced calmly. Reactor has lost containment. I am preparing it for ejection. Ejection system is offline. Pilot, portside thrusters, full emergency thrust on my mark.
Ready,
Desai acknowledged in as calm a voice as she could manage. Mark. Go, Skippy shouted. Whatever they were doing, it was more than the ship's already stressed artificial gravity and inertial compensation systems could handle. Normally, ship maneuvers were not felt at all by the crew. This time, I lurched in the command chair and had to hang on as the ship was flung to the right. There was a shudder, actually a wave of ripples traveling along the ship's spine, accompanied by a deep, harmonic groaning. No ship should ever make a sound like that. Ah, damn it. Reactor 4 is away. It impacted Reactor 2 on the way out, shutting down 2 now. Skippy's voice had a touch of strain to it. Missiles inbound, diverting all remaining power to jump drive capacitors. Hang on. This is going to be close. The main display indicated the jump drive was at a 38% charge. Skippy had told us that with the Dutchman trapped inside the Theranin Destroyer Squadron's damping field, we needed a 42% charge for even a short jump, and that still carried a severe risk of rupturing the drive. If that happened, we would never know it. We'd simply be dead between one peak a second and another. The missile symbols on the display, 7 of them, were coming in fast. 2 of the symbols disappeared as I watched, destroyed by our ship's point defense maser beams. The other 5 missiles continued toward us fast, fuzzing our sensors with their stealth fields and weaving as they bored in. 1 more missile destroyed. 4 still moving fast. Jump drive at 40%. Too close. I turned the knob to release the plastic cover over the self-destruct button and turned to look through the glass wall into the CIC compartment. Colonel Chang. He nodded, and I saw him flip back the cover to the other self-destruct button, the confirmation. Sir. He looked me straight in the eye and saluted. I returned the salute. Colonel Chang, we have been down a long, strange road together.
It's been an honor serving with you. My left thumb hovered over the self-destruct button. The ship was dying anyway. This was my fault. How the hell had I gotten us into this mess? The ship rocked again from another sizzling maser beam hit. Skippy, I said. I'm sorry. Good luck to... Skippy interrupted me. Jump option Delta, do it now. Jump drive still at only 40%, I didn't argue. Pilot, engage jump option Delta. Never before had I seen or felt the jump. Something had gone very, very wrong with this jump. The ship seemed to ripple and distort in my vision. It almost went transparent for a split second, and I had a flash of stomach-wrenching nausea. In the CIC, I could see one guy wiping his mouth after puking on the console. He hadn't lost focus for a moment. Skippy, what the hell was that? I calculated at least one of those missiles was going to slip through our point defenses, and our shields can't make a direct hit, so we jumped early. Also, I distorted space-time to throw us off our original emergence point that was... Well, I'd leave out the details. It was... Let's just say it was very bad for the jump drive. The good news is the Theranin will be delayed finding us again. I think. Long enough to recalibrate the jump drive so we can get out of here for real? No, long enough for Plan B. Joe, I need you to come get me and bring me to the flower. Don't argue. We can talk along the way. Let's go. Pulling the latch on the seatbelt open, I dashed around the chair and barely paused long enough to tell Chang he had the con before I ran into the corridor and bounced off the opposite wall. The low gravity made me clumsy. There were more bumps and scrapes before I reached the escape pod where we kept Skippy. He was sitting right where I'd left him, of course, being unable to move on his own. We kept Skippy there so that if we had to self-destruct the ship, he would have a chance to get away before the nuke exploded. Hopefully some enemy ship would be curious enough to take the escape pod aboard their ship. In addition to Skippy, the escape pod held the communications node we'd taken from the Kristang asteroid base. The comm node was there as bait. Any ship scanning the escape pod would identify the comm node as a valuable Elder device, even if they didn't know what Skippy truly was. Hi, Skippy, I said as I pulled him out of the crude receptacle we'd built for him. Although Skippy could talk with me and see me anywhere on the ship, I made a point to stop by the escape pod once a day to check on him. He made jokes about a monkey smelling up the escape pod, but I think he appreciated my efforts. What's the plan? I asked, as I tucked him under one arm like a football and ran back down the corridor to the tram that went along the Dutchman's spine. The plan is, he explained as I stepped into the tram and held on tightly, you'll get me into the flower and set the navigation system and jump drive on a timer, then you get back here. Whoa! The tram took off at jackrabbit speed. I didn't know it could move that fast. Ow! I lost my grip on the handrail and fell back to whack my head on the doorframe, hard enough to draw blood. Crap, Skippy! Warn me when you do something like that! You want to get further away before I blow up the Dutchman? No, dum-dum, I'm trying to avoid you having to blow up your ship at all. You monkeys are dumb as a stump, and you smell bad, but I've become fond of you. Damn it. Now that I've got you out here, I feel responsible for you. Like a smelly stray dog you find on the side of a road. You can't leave it there, and then you're stuck with it. How is you running away supposed to help us, genius? Without you with us, we'll never get the jump drive recalibrated, and that destroyer squadron will be on us again in a heartbeat. Oh, ye of little faith, Joe, you should be ashamed of yourself. I loaded a submind in the Theranin computer to temporarily recalibrate the jump drive and run the ship's systems. The submind is almost as dumb as you, because I wasn't able to squeeze anything useful into the crappy Theranin memory banks. It'll be good enough for what you need. Joe, if this works, the Theranin will chase the flower, and the Flying Dutchman has at least a chance to escape. The tram lurched to a stop, and the door slid open. Get in the elevator and hang on. It's going to be a fast ride. How do you figure we can get away? Simple Skippy magic. I'll program the flower's autopilot to detach, fly away at maximum burn, and perform a series of jumps. You set the autopilot on a timer for me, then you get back aboard the Dutchman. We'll jump at the same time in different directions. Just before you jump away, I'll distort space-time to throw you much further away than your drive can pull you with those degraded coils. The distortion will also make it more difficult for the Theranin to detect the other end of your jump point. You've seen me distort space-time before. What you haven't seen is that I can distort the fabric of space much more severely if I'm not inside the distortion field. so when I do it from outside the Dutchman, the effect will be magnified. Also, I will modify the flower's jump signature to match the Dutchman and make my outbound jump point stay open longer than usual. The Theranin will likely detect that first and hopefully follow me instead of you. Joe, I'm not going to lie. The odds are very much against you escaping from the Theranin without me. That's still better than you blowing up the ship. The elevator was slowing, and it approached the platform where the flower rested. I assume Skippy was already getting the frigate warmed up for flight. Any chance is better than zero chance. What's going to happen to you? I expect the Theranin will trap the flower in a damping field after a few jumps, and either they'll blow up the ship, or it will be destroyed by trying to jump inside the damping field.
That's no good, Skippy. He needed to work on his planning. You'll survive, sure, to, what, drift in space forever?
The elevator stopped, the door opened, and I stepped aboard the flower. Unless the Theranin take time to scan the debris field and find me and decide to take me aboard. It's not any worse than me getting flung away in an escape pod right before you nuke the Dutchman. So although it sucks, there's really no additional downside for me. I stopped walking.
Yeah, there is. Your whole plan sucks, Skippy.
I turned around, set him down on the floor of the elevator. Although when the elevator moved, he was going to fall on his side and roll around like a beer can, he would be safe.
What are you doing, you dumb ape? We don't have time for this, Skippy shouted.
What I'm doing is Plan C. I will stay aboard the flower and let the Theranin chase me. You do the rest of the stuff you said. Distorting the wormhole, making the flower's drive signature look like the Dutchman's, all that. You get my crew away from here. I knew enough of the flower's flight control systems to manage a short flight with pre-programmed jumps, and a short flight was all it was going to be.
Plan C is a stupid plan. Here's how you automatically know it's stupid. A monkey thought of it.
Skippy. I took a deep breath to collect my thoughts. We didn't have a lot of time. I'm not going to let you drift in space until the end of time. You've had enough loneliness for 1,000 lifetimes. We humans owe you big time, more than we can ever repay. And, damn it, you little shithead, you're my... I can't believe I'm saying this. You're my friend. I hit the button to send the elevator back down.
Wait!
The elevator door froze halfway closed.
Wait, wait! Joe?
You're going to do this?
For me?
Somebody has to, Skippy, and I'm the one here right now. I hit the button again and the door slid an inch more toward closing. Take care of my ship.
Wait! Joe, I...
His voice faded.
You know my memories aren't complete. I know they're not complete. Maybe they're not even real. But I'm pretty sure that I never had a friend before. Never thought my first real friend would be a freaking monkey,
he finished with a disgusted grumble. No. You know what? Fuck this.
Fuck this!
His voice was loud enough to hurt my ears.
Bring me back to the Dutchman's Bridge. I'm going to find us a way out of this. Time for me to use this ginormous damn brain I have. Joe, come on, move. I'm going silent for a bit. Please, trust me.
Whatever Skippy was doing in there, and in whatever other space-times he occupied, the beer can was growing uncomfortably warm to the touch. I had to shift him from one hand to the other as I carried him back to the bridge. Everyone stared at me in shock. With a glance, I took in what I needed to know of our status. The jump drive held only a 28% charge. The process of calibrating the remaining jump drive coils was only 31% complete, but there were no other ships in detection range.
What happened? Chang asked while unbuckling from the command chair.
Skippy has a new plan. Right, Skippy? I set him in the receptacle we'd attached to the floor of the bridge in a cramped corner.
A better plan, I said as I buckled into the command chair.
Skippy.
Skippy.
Come on, Skippy.
I didn't say it was a better plan. It's a different plan. It's too late now for my original plan, thanks to you, Joe.
What was Mr. Skippy's original plan? Chang demanded. He was standing next to the command chair. Someone else had taken his station in the CIC.
I was going to heroically sacrifice myself for you lesser beings, Skippy explained. Joe stopped me because I would be an incalculable loss to the galaxy.
Yeah, that's why, I snorted. That, and the fact it was a stupid plan.
It wasn't stupid. You had a 12% chance to escape.
Is that 12, Skippy, or meh 12? 11.56492, roughly.
Close enough.
Okay, that may have been somewhat optimistic, but at least 7% for sure.
Yeah, I figured that. Tell me your new genius plan.
That's the thing, Joe. I don't have a genius plan. I searched for records of ships that had escaped from similar situations, and there were none. Then I used my incredible brain power to dream up a genius plan, and I got nothing. Nothing. No matter how I approached the situation, no matter how many variables I plugged in, I couldn't come up with any smart way out of this. So I realized what we need is a stupid plan. And I have a stupid plan, Joe. Even a monkey will think this plan is stupid. If this plan works, the Dutchman can escape. And if it doesn't work, the Dutchman will be incinerated. That's not great. Hey, if this plan fails, you monkeys will simply be dead. I'll be trapped in the core of a dying star for trillions and trillions of years.
Oh, hey, bonus. Why didn't you say that first? Sign me up.
What are the odds of this plan succeeding?
Meh. Probably somewhere south of 50-50, maybe.
I truly do not know. Nothing this stupid has ever been tried before in this galaxy. It's actually kind of exciting, Joe.
This stupid? Like, rednecks on TV stupid? I asked.
Nothing is as stupid as that, Joe. But for an AI like me, this approach is hold my beer, watch this, stupid.
I shook my head.
Skippy, you need to do a better job selling your ideas.
Selling?
Well, think about this, Joe. This could be your one big chance to achieve Florida man status.
Florida? I asked, puzzled.
I'm from Maine, dumbass.
No, he said with an exasperated sigh.
I mean the classic Florida man, like in the headlines. You know, Florida man eaten by pet alligator, or Florida man drunk, crashes car into police station, or Florida man naked runs.
We get the idea, Skippy.
Fine. What are our odds without this plan?
Zero.
That's not a meh zero, it's a zero, Joe. By my estimate, we have at most 1 minute before the first Theranin ship jumps in and detects us.
The display told me the jump engines now had barely a 30% charge.
Fine. Great. Explain your pl-
Enemy ship jumped in, Chang shouted.
An angry triangle symbol was now on the display, far enough away that we should be able to dodge most of its particle beam shots, too close for comfort.
We jump away now, Skippy? I asked anxiously. Maybe I should have left him in the elevator and taken the flower out myself as a decoy.
No, Joe. Jumping away now would be the smart thing to do. The smart thing to do has a zero chance of success, as I explained. Trust me. You will be awed by my stupidity.
We started Skippy's stupid plan with waiting another 35 seconds until three of the Theranin destroyers jumped in, locked onto us with their sensor fields, and began firing missiles and maser beams. We waited, even though we could have managed a short jump away with a 30% jump engine charge. We almost cut it too close. Maser beams knocked back our shields, and a missile got so close that fragments of its warhead hit one of our remaining functional reactors, and that reactor became less functional. Like, not at all. When we finally did jump away, the word jump was accurate, but away was not. A key stupidity in Skippy's stupid plan was jumping toward, not away from, the star. By toward, I mean we jumped in close. Close enough that if I could live on a star, I could see my house. Close enough that, deep as we now were in the star's gravity well, jumping back out would be difficult even for a ship with a full charge, a healthy set of coils, and a calibrated jump system. We didn't have any of those three critical assets. Jumping in close to the star, close enough that we needed our shields just to keep the ship from being fried, wasn't stupid enough for Skippy. As soon as we emerged from the jump point, we set course straight for the star and kicked the ship's tail, accelerated at maximum thrust, deeper into the gravity well. That was Skippy's hold my beer, watch this moment. The whole maneuver was sufficiently stupid that when the Theranin destroyers jumped in behind us, they hesitated to follow us in. For a minute, they spread out and tried to hit us from long distance. There was so much interference from the star's hellish magnetic field that their own networked sensor fields couldn't target us. One of the little green men must have made a decision after their maser beams all missed and their missiles went off course, because the destroyers turned at the same time and burned hard in after us. Here's the thing. Star carriers can jump long distances and jump again and again. That makes star carriers seem fast. They are not fast. What a star carrier can do is keep going long after other ships have run out of charge or burned out their jump drive coils.
In normal space, a star carrier handles like a big cruise ship, and the destroyers were like speedboats. A cruise ship can cross an ocean and leave any speedboats far behind after a while. Over any short distance, a speedboat will run rings around a cruise ship. What this means is those destroyers gained on us quickly. Very quickly. To see how quickly they were closing the distance, I didn't need to look at the rapidly decreasing range to target section of the main bridge display. I only needed to watch the triangle symbol of those five warships. Those triangles were swiftly moving across the display as I watched. In front of us on the display was the star, so close that the surface of the star was a straight line, not a curve at all.
Skippy, those ships are going to be on top of us in... Now I checked the estimated time to closure section of the display. 7 minutes. We can't jump away this close to a star, and those destroyers are going to pound us to dust. If this is the stupid part of your plan, I don't want to see any more. Joe, I promise, you ain't seen stupid yet. Watch this.
In front of us on the display, the surface of the star was no longer a straight line. It had a distinct indent to the surface, like an invisible knife was pushing into it. The dent widened and grew deeper, so deep the display had to zoom outward. Holy shit, he was making a giant hole in the star.
I'm distorting space-time, Skippy explained. When I release the effect, that hole in the star is going to collapse and cause a massive solar flare. Like a historic, holy-shit-size solar flare. One way or the other, this will be majorly interesting.
A solar flare that will incinerate the Dutchman? The Theranin destroyer squadron had seen the danger. They had turned around and were now burning at maximum thrust to get away from the star.
Maybe.
The really stupid part starts now. No one has ever tried this before, so hang on. Skippy released the space-time distortion of the star. On the display, the surface of the star rippled as it filled in the gap. Then the surface erupted outward. Toward us. Fast.
Skippy, I shouted.
The ship rocked.
The star is collapsing. Those are gravity waves hitting us at light speed. Jump option Zulu, Skippy shouted back. Now.
How the hell were we supposed to jump so deep in a gravity well? The display showed the front edge of the enormous solar flare had almost engulfed us. There was no time to argue.
Pilot, engage jump option Zulu, I ordered in as calm a voice as I could manage.
If this didn't work, at least we wouldn't need nukes to vaporize any trace of evidence that humans were roaming the galaxy. In front of me, Desai pressed the button to initiate the selected jump. Whatever Skippy was doing, the jump drive didn't like it. The whole ship flickered in and out of existence in my vision and shook violently. Displays went dark, and some exploded, sending showers of sparks cascading through the bridge and CIC. The artificial gravity clicked off, then on heavily, then off again. I was flung around in the chair so viciously it seemed my neck would snap. There was a terribly deep, wailing, moaning sound that grew louder and louder until my ears hurt. The lights went out.
Chapter 13. Regaining consciousness, for me, was the sort of thing where you fall into bed outrageously drunk, the bed starts spinning, and you snap awake because you're gonna hurl the contents of your stomach onto the bed.
Oh, right, sure. That's never happened to you.
Liar.
Anyway, in this case, I awoke while I was puking into my own lap, or trying to. Some chunks hung briefly in the air as the artificial gravity was off, then on, then off again. The intermittent zero-G was making my stomach flutter. I clamped my mouth shut so if I puked again, I wouldn't spew it all over the bridge. And a headache. My head throbbed so bad it felt like my eyeballs would explode.
Skippy, I heard myself saying in a strangled voice.
Sit-rep, was all I could manage to say at that moment. We have jumped past the edge of the star system. All five Theranin destroyers were engulfed by the solar flare. There are no ships pursuing us currently. Artificial gravity has stabilized temporarily. There are numerous injuries to the crew. Nothing serious. He didn't explain his definition of a serious injury. Damage to the ship is substantial.
How bad is it?
I was afraid to hear the answer.
Extremely, catastrophically bad.
Shut up and let me talk for a minute.
Skippy's voice was flat, none of the usual snarkiness.
Only reactors 1 and 5 are online. I have initiated an emergency shutdown of reactor 5 because it's losing containment. As it is, the leak will result in additional damage to reactor 3, which is already shut down. Reactor 1 has a slight loss of containment. The major problem with 1 is that it has almost completely lost cooling capacity. Temperatures are in the red, and if they continue to increase, and they will, there will be a catastrophic explosion that could destroy the aft part of the ship, including the remaining jump drives. Reactor 1's coolant pump is making a sound like if you put a pack of hyenas in a blender, only louder. Therefore, I am shutting down Reactor 1 also.
The problem is a pump?
Seems simple to me.
Can you fix it?
I called the 1-800 helpline for the pump manufacturer. They transferred me to some guy named Bob in Malaysia. The monsoon rain was pounding on his roof so bad I could barely hear him. He asked me to verify the pump was plugged in, then he suggested I turn it off and back on again. That didn't help. Also, I'm pretty sure Bob is not his real name, Skippy added quietly. Joe, for crying out loud, if I could fix the pump, don't you think I would have done it already? The pump isn't the only problem. The whole cooling system got peppered with shrapnel from a near miss.
The ship will completely lose power, I started to ask.
I requested you to shut up while I'm talking, like that was ever going to happen.
He sounded tired.
Correct. After the last two reactors shut down, the ship will have only backup power from the capacitors. There is enough charge in the jump drive coils for one more moderate jump. Unfortunately, such a jump will not get us to the next closest star system, and we clearly can't go back to where we were. I expect the Theranin will detect our current position within 2 hours. The gamma ray burst when we jumped in could not be masked, and as we are on the periphery of their star system, this area is highly likely to be within their sensor coverage. The Theranin now know one of their own star carriers is hostile. They will be calling in reinforcements. Colonel, you may now speak.
The situation can't be entirely hopeless, or you wouldn't have bothered to shut down the reactors. What are our options?
By options, I meant other than engaging the self-destruct. We have one option. Well, two, if you include self-destructing the ship. We use the remaining charge in the jump drive to leave this position as soon as possible. I am running a diagnostic on the jump drive coils now to avoid rupturing the drive during a jump. Our jumps while we were within the dampening field and then within my warpage of space-time caused severe damage to the drive coils. Only 27% of the drive coils can be trusted to function properly at this point.
Jumping to the middle of interstellar space, with all the reactors dead and the capacitors draining, sounds like going from the fire into the frying pan. We're dead either way.
Can the reactors be fixed? The short answer is no. Not with the equipment on board. Star carriers travel with a host of support vessels and are not designed to sustain themselves for long-term operations. Spare parts and the ability to manufacture replacement parts are in short supply. The long answer is shmaybe.
Shmaybe? I asked, surprised.
This was the old Skippy I knew. Something short of a confident maybe. Given enough time and raw materials, the ship might be restored to functioning. I have a plan. You are not going to like it.
Skippy was right. I didn't like it. I also didn't have a choice. Or a better idea.
Not having anything useful to do on the bridge, in a ship with no power, I helped clean up the mess. I talked to the crew briefly on the intercom and headed off to the sick bay. Not surprisingly, none of the special forces were there, although the injury report Skippy loaded onto my iPad listed several broken bones, concussions, and soft tissue injuries like dislocated shoulders among our Spec Ops super soldiers. They were taking care of each other and remaining alert, as if they needed to be ready to repel boarders or some crazy stuff like that. They would report to the sick bay when I gave them an all-clear signal. Maybe they simply needed to feel useful. I could understand that. I felt pretty useless myself at that moment. Chang had the con, such as it was, and the duty crew in the CIC was monitoring our malfunctioning sensor field in case the Theranin had an extra ship out there somewhere. Right now, even a Kristang dropship could have shot holes in us. There were three of the science team in sick bay. One wrist sprain, one broken nose and bloody forehead combination, plus one broken leg. Dr. Skippy, the mad scientist, was taking care of them with his scary-looking robots. The science team heard my brief status report over the intercom and naturally had many questions. I had few answers. What I should have done is walk around the ship reassuring people. Instead, I took a brief break to splash water on my face and flush the puke taste out of my mouth. In the cramped Theranan bathroom, kneeling on the floor to reach the sink, I addressed Skippy, trying to talk to him the way I normally did, keep the fear out of my voice.
All right, Skippy, I have to give you props. Even your stupid plans work great.
Sure, sure, that's what happened. I'm a freaking genius.
My spidey sense tingled. He wasn't fooling me for a second.
You lying little jerk.
Truth, Skippy. The truth shall set you free.
I never understood that expression. Lying is so much easier, Joe.
Now, Skippy.
Well, here's the thing, he said, in his nervous tone that was the reason he could never successfully lie to me. My original stupid plan was truly pure genius. The Theranan would never have expected us to try anything that stupid. After I created that solar flare, much bigger even than I had hoped, by the way, I didn't have much data on that star, and I had to estimate the composition of its photosphere.
Get to the point, please, Skippy. My headache was killing me.
After I triggered the solar flare, my plan was to distort space-time in reverse, to flatten it enough right around the ship that we could jump away. I knew the Theranan ships had no chance to escape. The gravity waves propagated at the speed of light, and those ships were too deep in the gravity well to jump away. The problem was, I'd never before flattened space-time to that extent so deep in a gravity well. It was theoretically possible. However, I didn't have the math for it. I had to guess. Go in on blind faith. That was the stupid part.
Okay, stupid, but hey, it worked. We're alive, mostly.
You want the truth, Joe?
It didn't work, not entirely. Not the way I planned it, Skippy admitted sadly.
The flattening space-time part, I mean. I couldn't make it hold long enough to get the ship all the way through the jump. The gravity waves made space-time resonate in a way I couldn't predict, and I didn't have time to create a model and test it.
I failed. I totally failed.
Then how are we still alive?
You monkeys would describe it as luck.
The gravity waves on this end of the wormhole caused a resonance in space-time that made the wormhole fail as we entered it. The presence of the ship inside the wormhole made the resonance increase exponentially. The laws of physics here are an annoying pain most of the time, but in this case, they saved our asses. Because the ship had already emerged from the far end of the wormhole before we entered it on the near end, it would have violated causality for the ship to be destroyed while in transit. The universe doesn't allow causality to be messed with in that way, so it collapsed all the probabilities, except for the extremely unlikely one where we somehow survived the transit and emerged safely on the far end. It's kind of like sending a message via internet protocol. The message gets chopped up into bits that take different routes to the destination, then it is reassembled. That's why you were nauseous, and now you have a headache. Your body was ripped apart at the subatomic level and reassembled many times. What you experienced, the ship seeming to blink in and out of existence, actually happened. Every time the ship was destroyed in transit, the universe hit the reset button and restored us to existence, because it had to.
I shook my head in stunned disbelief. Wait, we died, except we didn't?
Correct. Because we hadn't died on the far end of the wormhole, we couldn't die on the near end, or in transit.
Whoa. Whoa indeed.
Joe, this is a tiny, tiny glimpse into how the universe truly works.
Awesome. We can figure out the rest from here, huh?
That would be a resounding no. Let me give you an example. A dog sees you bring a new bag of kibble into the house. The dog may see you getting the bag of kibble out of the car. You can even take the dog to the pet store with you, and the dog can see you take the bag of kibble off the shelf there. That does not mean the dog grasps the concept of where kibble really comes from, or the concept of, well, concepts.
Thank you for the big vote of confidence in us monkeys. I'm being realistic here, Joe. Your smartest theoretical physicists are still only staring at the garage door thinking that is the magical source of endless kibble.
I wasn't going to argue with an AI about the merits of monkey brain power.
Let's keep this luck part between us, agreed? The crew needs to have confidence in you, misplaced as it is.
I looked at myself in the mirror, a mirror we humans had installed since the Theranan cyborgs had thought such things were foolish.
Most of the vomit was off my uniform or mashed enough into the digital camo pattern that it looked as if it belonged there. My face looked like hell. I needed sleep, as if that was going to happen any time soon. Unbelievable. I was alive only because the future me on the other end of the wormhole hadn't died. A thought occurred to me. Wait, what did you say about the version of the Dutchman that came out of the wormhole? What did you mean, version? That's not something I can tell to monkeys. Shouldn't have mentioned it. Fine. I got a whopping headache anyway. What's next? We made one last jump using remaining power and the jump drive capacitors. Then we jumped again, and again, and again. Power for the jumps, and almost everything else aboard the Dutchman, came directly from Skippy. He pulled power from some other space-time, or from quantum bubbles, or from magical fairy dust, or some crazy shit like that. I didn't understand it, and our science team, despite nodding their heads in deep thought, had no freaking clue what Skippy was doing either. The problem with Skippy powering the ship is whatever source he pulled power from was enormous, like a small star, and he wasn't able to regulate the power flow very well because he wasn't designed to do that. The result of him pulling in way too much power was that we kept blowing systems all over the ship. Relays burned out, capacitors melted, anything related to electricity had a short lifespan, and it was a race against time. Could Skippy get us to our destination before we blew every circuit in the ship? To reduce power needs, we had no stealth field. Shields were at minimum power to protect us only against microscopic impacts from space debris, and life support, like heat, lights, and oxygen recycling, were cut back. Some parts of the ship were evacuated, so we could entirely cut power to those areas. Artificial gravity was lowered to 18%, that system's most efficient power setting other than being switched off. I wasn't ready for zero-G yet. 18 people were living aboard the Flower, because that ship had plenty of power. Although that little ship was pushing its limits to supply fresh oxygen and expel waste heat from 18 living, breathing humans. The Flower had detached from its docking platform, and was now grappled directly onto the Dutchman's spine frame. We'd moved the little ship closer so it could supply partial power to its mother ship. That hadn't worked well. Skippy had to jury-rig power transfer cables, and the two ships' systems were incompatible. Conditions aboard the Flower were not only cramped, people there were living in the zero-G because the Kristang didn't have artificial gravity technology. Our special forces saw this as an opportunity for zero-G combat training. That was a good idea, and it kept people busy and focused. We all needed to keep busy, to keep our minds off our dilemma. Our destination was a marginally habitable planet, or more accurately, a planet Skippy thought might be habitable, in that it supposedly had an oxygen atmosphere and temperatures within a range humans could survive. His information was sketchy. He got it third hand from the Theranin, who got it from the Kristang, who got it from the Ruhar. The planet had been in Ruhar territory before the recent wormhole shift. No Ruhar lived there, which wasn't encouraging for us. The planet was now in Kristang territory, and apparently no lizards wanted to live there either. Also not encouraging. The reason we had to abandon ship was that Skippy needed to repair it, rebuild it from the junk pile it had become. We were going to leave the Flying Dutchman in orbit around a giant gas planet, with Skippy remaining aboard by himself. He was going to mine the planet's numerous moons for raw materials, and mine the gas giant's atmosphere for reactor fuel. While Skippy was rebuilding the ship, it would be torn apart and unable to support life. Could Skippy essentially build us a new ship from nothing much more than moon dust and toxic gases? To the crew, he was supremely, arrogantly confident. To me, in private, not so much. "I won't know until I get under the hood," he told me. "Could be expensive. You got insurance on this thing, right? Might want to think about a rental car." When a car mechanic talked to me like that, he probably needed to make a payment on his boat. "Be serious for a minute, Skippy. Can you fix the ship?" "That's not a yes or no question, Joe. Let's see if I can dumb this down enough for you. I don't have enough data now. The question is whether my repair effort will consume resources faster than I can create new ones, and I won't know that until I scan what raw materials are available. If I don't find critical elements quickly or it takes too much energy to process the raw materials, then I'm on a downward spiral. Joe, I simply do not know.
The only data I have on this system is a vague report the Kristang got from a Ruhar computer when they captured Paradise. The Ruhar only cared whether the system held a habitable planet. Data on the other planets is very thin. I'm guessing. We don't have another survivable option in range. Oh, I said. About that rental car. The Flying Dutchman limped into orbit around the gas giant, an orbit that was barely adequate for Skippy's needs. The bottom of the orbit dipped too close to the cloud tops, while the other end of the orbit swung inconveniently far away. With the ship completely drained of all but emergency power, there was no energy to spare for altering the Dutchman's orbit. Skippy said he could live with it. The first thing Skippy did was listen for any sign of other ships in the star system, and he didn't find anything. If there was a ship, it was silent and stealth, and we couldn't do anything about it. Any ship that had been in the system long-term, even stealth, would have left a trail of exhaust and other gases. Skippy didn't see anything like that, and there didn't seem to be any point for a ship to be stealthed so far inside Theranin Kristang territory. Next, he checked out the second planet from the star, the place we humans would be living while Skippy pimped our ride by himself. At that moment, the second planet was on the other side of the star system, only a couple of weeks from swinging completely behind the star.
Sir, Adams asked while we were all still reading through Skippy's data, what do we call the planet?
Which one? I asked. The one we'll be living on or this gas giant?
Oh, duh, the one we'll be living on, of course.
Nobody cared about Skippy's gas station, which was all the giant planet meant to us, a source of helium-3. According to Skippy's preliminary data, the second planet in the system, the only one that could support human life, was only marginally habitable, and that was the good news. Its orbit was elliptical rather than round, so each year it swung far away from the star, then much closer. The planet's funky orbit took it close to the outer edge, then inside the middle of the Goldilocks zone, where it was not too hot and not too cold for life. The planet was frozen most of its year, with only part of the surface along the equator thawing as it swung closer to the star. Another piece of good news is the planet was approaching the summer part of its orbit. It should become marginally warmer while we lived there. Oxygen levels in the habitable area were low, equivalent to 10,000 feet elevation on Earth, while gravity was 14% stronger than Earth normal. And because we were on a stolen Theranin ship, the artificial gravity aboard the Dutchman was normally set at 83% of Earth normal. At my request, Skippy had been able to goose up the gravity to 87% of Earth normal. Still, setting down on the planet would be a 31% increase over the gravity we'd gotten used to aboard the ship. And since the battle, gravity aboard the ship had been much lower. The sudden increase in weight was going to be tough. Life there, when not covered under snow and ice, consisted of simple grasses, moss, and lichen, the type of plants you would find in the tundra of Canada or Siberia. Skippy detected substantially more life in the oceans than on the land, but most of the oceans were covered by ice, just like the land. The place was chilly, heavy, and hard to breathe. Definitely not paradise.
It's cold. We could call it Hoth, William suggested.
Hoth, I asked. Why's that?
Hoth. You know, the ice planet, where the rebels had their base and the Empire Strikes Back.
Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. I remembered now.
No, we're not calling it Hoth. Sounds too much like Hot.
This planet is a crappy place. Nobody wants to be there. We're only going there because we have to, and we're leaving as soon as we can.
Seeger snorted from the pilot seat.
Sounds like Newark.
Newark? I asked.
You ever fly through Newark?
Seeger shrugged.
Lots of people go through Newark, but no one wants to be there.
Adams and I shared an amused look.
I like it, Adams said.
Racking my brain, I tried to remember whether any of our merry band of pirates was from Newark, or New Jersey in general.
And what the hell, why not?
Newark it is.
Uh-oh.
Damn, Skippy said. Joe, we have a major complication. There is a group of Kristang on the planet.
What?
My heart sank. The Dutchman was dead. We couldn't live on the ship while it was being repaired. We couldn't live on a planet occupied by Kristang either. There was no other option. We came all this way for nothing?
What the hell are they doing there?
Wait, I'm still processing the data. This may not be a total disaster.
It is a small group. They do not have a ship with them.
The data I have comes from the two small satellites they have in orbit. I think... It appears they are a small group, around 30, that were landed there to search for remains of an Elder ship crash. That certainly sounds familiar, huh? They have one base, and only two, maybe three aircraft. They stay close to the main crash site.